This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we got double trouble in the studio this morning is Brian Sivak, CTO at HHS, and Todd Park, the United States CTO. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Terrific.
Fantastic.
Well, lots of topics today to cover. We can talk about the Washington Redskins, the Nationals, the Caps, but no sports today. We're going to talk about something called a Datapalooza. I mean, that sounds like a strange, like a rock and roll event. We're going to talk about a Datapalooza today. But before we begin, why in the world do I have these two characters in the studios talking about some kind of a rock concert? Well, Brian, tell us about your background and how you wound up at HHS, please.
Sure. It's a great question. So I am at heart a software entrepreneur. That's my background. That's where I started off in 97 in San Francisco and did that for a while, both in San Francisco and in London. But always had a sort of interest in public service and started, I got a phone call from the city of Washington, D.C. in 2009 asking me if I was interested in being the CIO for the city. One thing led to another, started doing that, and that was the beginning of a stint in the public sector.
Right, and then Maryland, then HHS.
That's right.
Wow.
And the HHS gig, as everybody probably knows, I took over for Todd Park, who when he went to the White House. And really, I have Todd to thank. We had coffee one day. Actually, this is kind of a funny story. So Todd moved to the White House. I was pretty excited because I wanted to do all this stuff with Maryland and the White House. And so I said, hey, Todd, let's grab some coffee. So we did. Got about 30 minutes into my pitch about all of these great things that we were going to do together. And Todd said, hang on a second, dude. I want you to do my old job. And all I could say was, That wasn't how this was supposed to come out. And so one thing led to another, and here I am.
Thank goodness he said yes.
Yeah. You know, Todd, in big companies, they say the first thing you want to do is find your replacement because you want to move up. And I don't know if you had that plan or not. Well, tell us about your background and how you ran into this character here.
Well, so like Brian, my background is that of a tech entrepreneur. Then I got recruited in 2009 to be the CTO of HHS, which they actually framed as a tech entrepreneur in residence job, like someone who's supposed to be an internal change agent who works with HHS leadership and the HHS team to unleash the power of tech to improve healthcare in America. When the White House asked me to do that same job, but for the whole U.S. government as U.S. CTO, I knew I had to find an incredibly capable person to continue doing the work at HHS that Secretary Sebelius, Deputy Secretary Kaur really wanted to get done. And there was one name that popped into my head that I became obsessed with. And so I started to unfurl a plan to ensnare Brian. And thank goodness he came in.
But kindred spirits, practical, real-world commercial experience where you're in the fight. I mean, you're in the fight getting bloodied. And you take this to the federal government because you want to actually say, well, maybe I can take the skill set and use the federal government to accomplish something. Huh? Is that right, Brian?
Yeah. You know, when I look at one of the things that I discovered when I moved over to the public sector was that, you know, it was funny when I went in, I had the stereotype of the public sector employee in my head, you know, the kind of common stereotype where the bureaucratic clock punching people riding out pensions, you know, not really caring. And what I found through all of my public sector jobs in DC, in Maryland, and now in the federal government is that some of the most dedicated, talented, intelligent, capable people I've ever worked with in my entire life are part of these things, and they're just ready to be activated. You know, I mean, there's so much potential in the government to do amazing things, and the government is already doing amazing things, which not a lot of people really know about. But once you can kind of get in there and shake things up a little bit, the potential is limitless.
And let's put this this theory into work boots. And that's what Mr. Work Boots here, Todd, did. He said, okay, let's put this in work boots. Let's come up with something, a private partner relationship where we get this juice going and maybe come up with some kind of a fun name. And Dottapalooza was born, and bang, it's successful, isn't it?
That's right. So actually, the mission that Secretary Sebelius and Deputy Secretary Kaur gave me when I first actually started HHS was, among other things, to try to figure out how to maximize social return on the investment in data that HHS had made. So data on everything from basically the quality of our healthcare providers to information about drugs filed with the FDA, medical, scientific information at the NIH, so on and so forth. Like, we have this extraordinary array of data at HHS. So how can we actually unleash the full power of that data, the information, to help the American people? What we hit upon after a bunch of thinking and conversation was, it's really not about the apps or services that the federal government can build itself with the data, right? The play really is to open up the data in computer-readable form so that everybody else in the country can tap into it and turn it into all kinds of new apps, new services, products, and insights that can benefit the American people in extraordinary ways. And this was really modeled on what the federal government had done before with, for example, weather data, right? When the National Weather Service made its weather data downloadable electronically by everybody for free, what then happened is entrepreneurs, innovators turned it into fuel for the Weather Channel, weather.com, iPhone weather apps, weather insurance, and much more, which improved all of our lives and created a ton of jobs. And the government ran a similar play in the 80s, beginning with President Reagan, when he initiated the process of liberating access to the global positioning system, GPS, enabling civilians in the commercial sector to tap into GPS. And of course, as I think we all know, GPS now powers everything from navigation systems to precision crop farming to
some people are guessing $1 billion industry, GPS.
Just that alone has actually added, through the action of entrepreneurs tapping into it, right, tens of billions of dollars annually in value to the American economy. So we cooked up this play called the Health Data Initiative back in 2010, working with the Institute of Medicine to run this play again, but this time with vast reservoirs of data and information sitting in the vaults of HHS. The point of this play is not to just liberate data for its own sake, right? Because one of the things we say is that data by itself is useless, right? I can't pour data on a wound and heal it. I can't feed my baby daughter data, right? Data is only useful if it gets applied to create actual public benefit. And to be applied, it needs appliers. So you actually need to not just publish data, you need to actually catalyze the emergence of an ecosystem of innovation that uses that data to create awesomeness for the American people. So what we did was we started with a meeting held by the Institute of Medicine, March 2010, with about 45 entrepreneurs, actually very skeptical entrepreneurs, I should say, who we convinced to come into a room and kind of hear about this idea. And to get the conversation started, we put a pile of data meekly in the middle of the table of this room and asked these entrepreneurs to scrub into it. And it was data about the quality of hospitals, patient satisfaction with nursing homes, the relative performance of healthcare systems across different communities. And we said, look, we could make this really easy to find, really easy to use, but would you find it interesting? What would you do with it? And they got very excited about it, and they brainstormed more and more uses of it. Then at the end of the day, we said, okay, what we're going to do is Secretary Sebelius and the Institute of Medicine are going to host in 90 days, the first ever, we just made up the name on the spot, Health Data Palooza. And whichever one of you is can actually build or get your friends to build one of the apps you just brainstormed will showcase you and make you famous. We weren't exactly sure what would happen after that, but 9 days later, Institute of Medicine, the secretary hosted the first ever Health Data Palooza. It was actually technically called the Community Health Data Forum, but really we call it the Health Data Palooza. 21 new upgraded apps. Many actually that got finished coded finished coding that morning, got debuted that day by very excited entrepreneurs and innovators, and that then unleashed a wave of awesomeness that Brian will describe.
So Brian, that's what the Health Data Consortium is all about.
The Health Data Consortium is essentially a nonprofit organization that was formed, by a number of different actors in the health data ecosystem. People who are interested in seeing health data have a sort of consistent and powerful voice outside of the walls of government. So one of the things that the Health Data Consortium has recently taken on is the production of this event, the annual Health Data Palooza. And this year, Todd was describing sort of the history and the first year of it. This is actually the fourth iteration of the Health Data Palooza, and it's going to be pretty awesome. We're expecting between 1,800 and 2,000 people to attend this year. And this is literally everybody from academics to govies to VCs.
And what was the start, Todd? Like 50?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, that first initial meeting was like 45 folks.
45? Let's graph that. That's a hockey stick there.
That's a logarithmic scale right there. So, yeah. So, I mean, you got everybody, though, right? I mean, everybody who's anybody who's interested in health data, who's interested in the health and healthcare ecosystem. It's going to be a pretty massive event. We've got an amazing lineup of speakers coming up. I guess I should say June 3rd and 4th this year.
Right at the Omni. You can follow it. Hashtag HDPalooza, P-A-L-O-O-Z-A. And the website for information, you can just type in DataPalooza and you come up at the Health Data Consortium, right?
The website for the conference is healthdatapalooza.org.
Yeah, just type in DataPalooza and you wind up there and you can register and have a lot of fun at the old Omni. Kind of a lot of memories of that hotel. Let's take a break and come back, talk more about apps. The whole idea of the Wild West and healthcare apps, I mean, and this is what we're talking about. It's really just, it's just the beginning stages of all this. It's very exciting. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Brian Sivek, CTO at HHS, and we have Todd Park, the United States CTO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Boil and Bubble Double Trouble. We have Brian Sivek, CTO at HHS, and we have Todd Park, USCTO. We're talking about the DataPalooza. If you want more information on that, you can just go to any social media. There's hashtags, there's websites, there's blogs, all kinds of information on this. June 3rd, June 4th at the old Omni, and there's going to be 1,500 innovators. And by the way, all the spots for the sponsors are sold out. So that means something in this town, doesn't it, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. This is, I got to tell you, over the last 2 months, I've been getting all kinds of requests for people to be able to attend. This is, I think, the hottest ticket in town right now.
So, Todd, has your high school buddies called you up and say, hey, Todd, old buddy, old pal, can you get me in?
Well, actually, I think the latest report is that there are going to be 1,800 to 2,000 folks there and several thousand more folks who can't get in.
Can't get in, wow.
Who will actually be watching
storming
online.
The doors.
So all sort of, focused on and all talking about how health data can improve healthcare in America.
Well, let's put this in perspective, Todd. Back when you were in college, maybe taking your computer science class, did you ever imagine it would be thousands of people storming the doors to learn about developing software? I mean, who'd have thunk it?
I did, actually. I mean, honestly, because I think the thing that's super exciting about technology is not the technology itself, but what technology can actually do to make people's lives better, right? And so it's the application of technology that really interests folks like Brian and me and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of other people, right? And healthcare is just a huge opportunity for technology to make a difference. And I think that's why the Health Data Palooza has so much excitement building around it, because it's the place to go if you really want to talk with others about how data and IT can actually make healthcare better, can save lives, can improve access, improve affordability, and just unleash general awesomeness.
Start with the end in mind. Don't start with the code. Start with the end in
That's
mind.
Right.
The actual human
right.
being that improves healthcare. Brian, I follow this guy named Todd_Park on Twitter, and he tweeted out a little bit, kind of interesting tweet about another character with an Irish accent, Neil Brennan, about 100,000 downloads of hospital charge data in 24 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, you open the floodgates and it just pours out.
Yeah, actually, the updated statistic as of yesterday is 210,000 downloads.
Double what I think 100,000 is. I mean, that's a pretty good number in 24 hours, huh?
Yeah. No, this data set in particular, I think, is it's a real interesting one. For the audience, the listening audience that's not familiar, this is the Medicare hospital pricing data. So what?
Ooh,
what is
interesting, huh?
Yeah, what is literally charged by the hospitals to Medicare for the 100 most common sets of procedures that Medicare pays for, and what the data shows is that pricing is somewhat irrational. There's not really a clear link between what one hospital charges and another.
And just to be clear, there are two sets of numbers there. One is what the hospital charges, which is its standard charge for really everybody. And then there's the price Medicare pays, which is right. typically a lot lower. Medicare has made its payment rates public for a long time. The thing that's new is the so-called hospital charge master rates, right?
What's interesting is that we bought a car in December. I shopped that to death, and that sales guy was mad at me because I had him down to the penny, and I was twisting his arm, and it was a $20,000 car. Now, wait a minute. You may go in and get a $20,000 appendectomy and just say, oh, whatever it is, I don't care. I mean, isn't that kind of a different? I mean, you got to rethink the way we pay for healthcare.
Yeah, I heard somebody say at a conference a little while ago that we can't walk out of a deli without paying for a sandwich, but we can walk out of a hospital without paying for our procedure. And it's a good point, right? I mean, it's the pricing and the charges that consumers pay for their healthcare is very divorced from the actual procedures itself. These are some of the things that the data that we can provide can help, I think, shine some light into how this stuff actually works.
And just talk a bit about that.
Yeah, you know, and this is case in point, data liberation.
Yeah, and again, just to kind of be super specific, these charges are, you know, what the hospital standards charges are. A lot of Americans actually, of course, don't pay either themselves or through the insurer that they're insured by those charges, because the insurer negotiates a discount off those rates, just like Medicare negotiates a discount off those rates. But the uninsured and underinsured, and a lot of folks with actually crappy health insurance actually end up paying at those full rates. And so it's a big deal. And even folks who actually have insurance, the insurance company's rates negotiate off of that standard rate. So it's an important number to know. And no one's known the number before across the board for hospitals for these most common procedures. And so the data shows really, really profound and important things. So for example, take a hip and knee replacement. It turns out that a hospital standard charge for hip and knee replacement varies from, I think, $5,300 in Ada, Oklahoma, at a hospital there, to over $220,000. At a hospital in Monterey Park, California. Like, even within the same community, like Birmingham, Alabama, the hospital standard charge for a hip and knee replacement varies from $23,000 at one hospital in Birmingham to $141,000 at another hospital. And these variations weren't known before. Now they are. And it's generating up a lot of interest, as you can see, from the Dela numbers and the public conversation.
Yeah.
And that transparency is going to make for a more competitive marketplace. A more competitive marketplace is really good for consumers.
You know, Brian, I have a brother-in-law who's an actuary, and I thought it would take an actuary to kind of dig into this and really understand it. You don't have to be no stinking actuary. I mean, look at those numbers. Pretty obvious, huh?
Yeah, and this is and this is actually an amazing illustration of the power of releasing data, right? So when the data first came out, a few media outlets took it and did some really interesting and different visualizations of the data. One of my favorite ones was the Washington Post basically took a satellite view of essentially a 4-block radius in Miami, where two hospitals literally are 2 blocks from each other, and showed that these two hospitals that are 2 blocks from each other had prices that were literally, you know, one was twice as much as the other. And so that was just one visualization, right? There are millions of different ways to slice and dice this data to both look at it from different perspectives, but also learn new and interesting things from it. And that's what I'm really excited to see. A couple hundred thousand downloads. Who knows what people are going to do? And organizations like the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation are actually have announced that they're going to do a visualization challenge for this. So they're actually going to award some prizes for whoever can visualize this data in the best way. They're still working on the details of that.
And on top of that, actually, we're hearing about app developers who are incorporating the data into their apps so that consumers on their mobile phones or on the web can actually check out these prices in a really easy to use way, which will empower them as they make decisions that are really important for them and their families.
Which draws us back to the data palooza. There's challenges at the data palooza. Maybe one of the applications is visualizing some of this information at the data palooza coming up in the Omni, huh?
That's right. You know, so we'll certainly, I think, be talking a lot about this data along with lots of other data sets at the data palooza.
Yeah.
And the thing that to me is the most fun about the data palooza, and I plan to spend as much time there as I can this year, is just meeting with these amazing innovators and technologists and entrepreneurs, you know, doctors and patients who've created incredible apps, incredible services, incredible products that harness the power of data to help consumers make the right decisions for them and their families, to help get the best scientific information at the point of care for doctors and nurses, that do all kinds of things that end up saving lives, improving lives, and making care better.
You know, Brian, the Super Bowl is always done with Roman numerals, and this is done with a Roman numeral 4, data plus. I was at the one last year, and there were people in the audience from like Omaha and Texas, and they were stunned that Todd got up there and said, well, this stuff is available. They would go up to the microphone and go, what? It's what's available? Mm-hmm. And it was stunning because they had no concept that they could access this information.
Yeah, so this is something that you know, we're still working on. We need to get the word out in a much broader way about the stuff that we have available. I think, you know, really, if you look at what we've been doing over the last few years, it's been really focused on people who have a foundation of knowledge in healthcare, right? Subject matter experts, people who, you know, can take a look at these somewhat complex data sets and know what to do with them. But one of the things that we're really pushing hard on right now is kind of blowing that out. You know, we look at the world of people who are subject matter experts that can do interesting things with this data, and it's, you know, it's a relatively small circle. But when you expand that to people who can just do interesting things with data, period, right, it's a much, much larger circle. And so we're undergoing this, or we're undertaking these efforts of what we call data education to try to democratize access to the data, to make it a little bit easier for people who aren't subject matter experts to understand what the value of it is, and to get some, for example, online classes out into the public domain where people can literally, you know, just download and watch them and learn how to manipulate some of these data sets. So we're trying to really expand the value and the reach that we have for this stuff.
When we come back after the break, we'll talk more about YouTube and some interesting YouTube videos recently released with Todd Park starring in it, and talk more about, I think, the business models involved in the data palooza. I mean, that's really what motivates a lot of these people. They can actually take information from the government and come up with something that'll benefit consumers and actually earn money for them as well, which is a great motivator in this climate. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Going to take a break, come back. We're speaking with Brian Sivek, CTO of HHS. And Todd Park, United States CTO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Brian Sivek, CTO at HHS. We have Todd Park, United States CTO. We're talking Data Palooza coming up on June 3rd, June 4th, and it's a Roman numeral, Data Palooza Roman numeral 4. If you were lucky enough to get tickets, you go down there and learn everything. But maybe we're setting the stage for next year. Maybe setting the stage for someone listening to this when there's snow on the ground, scratching their head, saying, well, maybe I can take this data and come up with an application that can help my cousin who's a diabetic. I mean, that's what America's all about, isn't it, Todd? I mean, people scratch their head saying, geez, my cousin's a diabetic. Maybe I can have an app that can help him live and make it to my wedding.
That's right. Actually, I remember last year we were looking at the a list of companies that had applied to present at Health Data Palooza. There was this independent panel of judges that was actually going to pick the best ones. They were selected from, you know, the ranks of doctors, nurses, patients, et cetera. I remember actually just flipping through the list. And it was, I think, 200 plus companies. And, you know, I've done a lot of talks about health data and been to a lot of codathons and done meetings with entrepreneurs. And I thought I basically knew most of the companies that were using health data to improve healthcare. I remember looking through this list and like flipping through the names saying, I don't know who any of these folks are, right? Who are you? Where did you come from? And I looked at the founding dates of the companies. They were 2012, 2011, 2011, 2010. I was thinking, this is awesome. This is awesome, right? Because you have these entrepreneurs, these innovators all across the country, right? Who have an idea for how to make healthcare better, right? Have taken data sets that we and others have made available and use that data to actually build something that is in fact making life better. Right, and they're hiring people, and they're growing companies, and strengthening the economy. You know, it's just awesome. And I think one of the things that is true about really all great innovation ecosystems is that they're fundamentally decentralized, self-propelled, and out of control. The innovation ecosystem that uses health data to improve healthcare is at the point where it is really self-propelled and really out of control, which is a really wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. And Brian, you have a background in entrepreneurship too, don't you?
Yeah. You know, I want to add actually one thing to that because, you know, so I've been doing this job at HHS for about 10 or 11 months now. And one of the things that I've seen over the course of these months that really blows me away is people who literally know nothing about healthcare or public health jumping in headfirst to try to solve problems that they have personally experienced with this system.
My cousin's got diabetes,
exactly.
Right? Something
and,
like that.
And so healthcare, you know, one of the things that's blown me away about healthcare really over the past year or so is that I've had this realization that literally every single person in the country is a part of the system, right? They're a consumer of the product of healthcare. And so that means also that just about everybody has a story, right? And so actually some of the applications that are going to be presented on the main stage at the Data Palooza this year are examples of people who literally had no background in healthcare, but had a personal experience where something went wrong with the system that they realized, oh my God, I can do something different. I can change the way this works by building an app or building a solution using data that's available to actually solve this problem, not just for me, but for everybody else out there who has this problem. And to me, that is the fundamental signal that this stuff is ready to go.
And that's the question that Ben Franklin used to ask, and he came up with a lightning rod and he gave it away. He didn't make any money on a lightning rod, but that was his idea, wasn't it? I mean, it's incredible.
And the thing that's really, I think, phenomenal about what's happening is that there are so many folks, as Brian said, from all kinds of different places, with all kinds of different backgrounds, who are actually scrubbing in on how to make healthcare better. I'm leveraging the power of IT and data. There's actually rapidly growing investment in the space by angel investors and venture capital. There is a rising tide of companies and innovations that it collectively represents, I think, a rising tide of innovation that can really reinvent the system from the ground up, which is really exciting to see.
One rising tide is social media, and a lot of people follow Twitter, and they can follow you at Todd_Park. Is that your Twitter handle?
That's right.
How about you, Brian?
Brian Sivak, BryanSivak, all one word.
Sivak. And my handle is @RayGilRay. That's the you can follow me, and I'll be tweeting about this interview and blogging about it as well. Is there a blog that you like to read? Maybe our listeners can pick your mind and see what blogs you read. Maybe they can read the same blog you're reading, and which ones you like.
Well, on my Pulse app, on my iPhone, actually, I sample like all the tech blogs, TechCrunch, GigaOm, Fast Company, Wired, et cetera. Also read a whole bunch of healthcare blogs and blogs about specific topics, right? It's just extraordinary. I mean, it's kind of an obvious statement, but extraordinary, just how much information you can actually get tailored to what you're interested in super rapidly at your fingertips these days. We were just actually talking about the fact that, this is actually how I and increasingly many other folks actually get their information, as opposed to through traditional channels, through social media, through blogs, right, through stuff that gets actually pushed to me on my phone.
How about you, Brian? Is the Buzz blog, is that the one at HHS or...?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff, and it's funny, for me, it's really fewer specific blogs that I follow and more specific topics and stories that get pushed to me based on filters and things that I have set up and alerts. What is interesting to me is that, I look at my parents, right? They subscribe to, I think, 4 newspapers.
Really? Paper? Uh-huh. Piece of paper newspapers?
Paper newspapers. Wow. I think partly it's because my dad likes doing the crossword puzzle on newsprint, but they read it every morning. I can't remember the last time I picked up a paper newspaper, right? And I think that, this is a trend that's just accelerating. And it's interesting for the media industry in particular because they have to adapt to this change. But, the idea of sort of these tailored news stories, right? Things that are pushed to you based on your interests, based on what you're working on at the time, based on other signals that you might have sent out into the ether. I think that's really, kind of one of the interesting things to focus on.
I thought I was painting the living room for my wife this weekend, and I usually have a newspaper under the can of paint. I couldn't find newspapers in my house. That's the worst.
It's a sign of the times. It's a sign of the times.
Putting things down on the floor, building fires.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go to 7-Eleven and buy a newspaper. It's good for painting. Maybe that's how they should be selling it. I don't want to walk out of the studio without talking about one of Todd's favorite topics. It's a Spanish phrase called data liberación. And open data. And if you go to YouTube and type in Todd Park, you can find this slick little YouTube video with Todd and this guy named Steve talking about open data. And just in May here, we had a big breakthrough, didn't we?
That's right. So last week, the president announced a historic executive order, the Open Data Executive Order, that says that going forward, new and modernized federal information resources shall be open and machine readable by default. While protecting privacy, confidentiality, and national security. And this was actually accompanied by an open data policy from the Office of Management and Budget and the Office of Science and Technology Policy that lays out in detail how this is going to happen. And also, very excitingly, on GitHub, we published a set of tools.
That's the important part for developers out there.
Yeah. So a set of tools in an arsenal called Project Open Data that's open to everybody that contains best practices, case studies, and actual tech tools that agencies or really anyone can use to help advance the cause of open data. So, for example, a tool that takes a spreadsheet or CSV file and turns it into something that's API'd. And so we're already getting pull requests. We're seeing community build up around Project Open Data. And it's very, very exciting to watch.
So I imagine this might be a topic at the Datapalooza. I mean, open data. I mean, it's just hand and fist, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, the way the Datapalooza is structured is that the morning sessions are plenary format with speakers, keynote speakers, and then the afternoons are broken up into a series of six tracks. And while all of the tracks in some form or another will probably touch on open data and these general concepts, we will have some specific sessions focused primarily on that.
You know, in the break, Todd, I talked about this fun fact I came up with. 89% of U.S. healthcare workers use smartphones for work purposes. I mean, what a change. And if I'm in the hospital and a nurse can help make me feel better quicker, hey, give her every app you can, huh?
That's right. I mean, there was actually, even until recently, folks talking about, maybe even today, people talking about mHealth, like it's some kind of discrete sector. All right. And I think that's actually now become a redundant phrase, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, healthcare and health in general is suffused by and pervaded by the use of mobile technology and information technology in general to make health and healthcare better. And that's a terrific thing to see.
Now, there have to be security regulations involved here and protections. But as long as those are used, then you can open up that data securely and safely.
Yeah. So one fundamental principle, of course, is that patient privacy is of paramount importance, right? And so, for example, the data sets that the federal government is publishing on healthdata.gov are not personal information. They're information like what's the patient satisfaction statistics in the aggregate with American hospitals, or you know, what are the structured product label information data points for drugs filed with the FDA, right, or that kind of thing. So that's really important to stress.
Let's take a break. We come back, talk more about the Datapalooza, and maybe do a little 10-question test to see which gentleman in the room is the real nerd. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Brian Sivak, CTO of HHS, Candidate 1. And we have Todd Park, U.S. CTO, Candidate 2. We'll see who the real nerd is. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Brian Sivak, CTO of HHS, Todd Park, United States CTO. We've been talking about the Datapalooza coming up on June 3rd at the Omni. If you're lucky enough to get a ticket, you can learn about all kinds of things. There are going to be healthcare executives there, startups, developers, researchers, providers, consumers, all kind of people who are trying to take information from the federal government and help people sitting in a bar in Chicago, help them, maybe someone, taxi driver in Seattle, helping U.S. citizens with this information that's just sitting there waiting to be released. Every show in the last round, I have a 10-question test, ask each of my guests. You two would be an interesting test for this. It's my nerdometer test. What we're going to do is ask 10 questions and find out who the card-carrying nerd is in this room. I'm going to start off with Mr. Sivak here. We're going to ask you the first question is, the year you bought your first computer.
So are you asking the year I bought my first computer or the year that the first computer was bought?
No, you bought your first computer.
All right. Well, I have to establish some geek cred here. So I'm going to tell you that in 1986... a IBM XT with an 8088 chip, and it showed up in my house. My dad and I spent a lot of time messing around with that. I had my own BBS back in the day. So I think I want to just set the
whoa, he's strutting the stuff here. You better have a good answer.
That's a good one. First computer that I ever bought. I mean, and see, this is going to get into, well, you know, when did I actually start
bragging
making
rights.
Money and all that kind of stuff. But out of college was probably the first one that I ever bought.
And that year would be?
97.
Okay, we'll write that down. We'll see what that... and your first cell phone?
My first cell phone was 98.
And you've got your own Twitter feed. And do you have your own blog?
I do not have a blog.
Okay. Do you use any online personal backup?
I do.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Apple iPhone.
Okay. And how many apps are on that?
That is a great question. Way too many to count, but according to the statistics on the phone, I have
the data collection.
336.
336. Well, that's a number. That's a good one. And how many, this is a new question, how many tablet devices do you have in your house? Not if you have any.
How many tablet devices I have? Do you count wife and children?
Oh, I don't know if it's fair. Okay.
All right. So if you count those, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Wow. That's a good number.
It's ridiculous.
And what social networking sites do you participate in?
I have a profile on LinkedIn. I am I have a Facebook account, although I'm not a super active Facebooker. Okay. I tweet, Instagram, you know, all the usual ones.
And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Oh, electronic.
Okay. Mr. Park.
Yes, sir.
Challenger, year you bought your first computer, please.
So the first computer actually actively used, like as per Brian's initial data point, was I think before the IBM XT, because it was when the Commodore VIC-20 was mm-hmm. actually the hot computer.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a Commodore VIC-20, and it was super exciting because back in the day when you bought a computer game for the VIC-20, what you did is you bought a book, and you then opened the packaging around the book, and then you read the code, and you typed the code into the VIC-20, and you saved it to a cassette tape. And they mm-hmm. hit play on the cassette tape, they could play the game.
wouldn't go today.
Yeah, probably wouldn't work today. But it was a lot of fun, actually, to build your own game. And then, in terms of like me having like independent means and like buying my own computer, would be freshman year of college.
And
that was one of the big boxy original Macintoshes.
It was like in late 80s then?
90.
90. Yeah. Pretty close. And the year your first cell phone?
First cell phone was 98. Now, I'll always remember this because actually it was as part of my startup. We were all like really young. Like I was 25 at the time, 24, 25. And me and a couple of my teammates were sitting at a cafe in San Diego. And we were actually talking on our huge, gigantic, bulky, gray Motorola cell phones. And there's these two kind of sharply dressed business people walking by. They looked at us and they shook their head and said, well, they're just going to give cell phones to anybody, aren't they? They were right, it turns out.
A ne'er-do-well, Todd Park.
That's right. Yeah, young, delinquent, right, with their cell phone.
And you have a Twitter feed, we know that.
Yes, sir.
And do you have your own blog? You contribute to blogs, though, I know that.
Mm-hmm. Whitehouse.gov and White House OSTP.
And online personal, I better not ask a guy from the White House about online personal backup. That might be the wrong question to ask. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone,
okay. Mm-hmm. Number of apps on that?
Many fewer than Brian.
I've
started to viciously curate the apps.
Curate them.
So probably fewer than 50. I would say probably about 40 apps.
Okay, now this question is going to separate the men from the boys. How many tablets do you have in your home?
So this is an interesting question because we started a kind of a mini tablet explosion. We went from one to two. Mm-hmm. Then if you count the iPod devices, right? Not the iPhones, but the iPod devices, three, four. And then what happened is that our kids started to get addicted to them.
So you need to pull back.
And I'm okay, like with our kid getting addicted to tech. Yeah. But my wife, I don't know, she's a doctor. She's read lots of studies. She said, you know what? Actually, having them like hang out all day on the iPad is not a good idea. So we've actually hidden the iPads and hidden the iPods.
We have so many ways to hide them.
So we've got four of them, right?
Okay.
But we bring them out like only occasionally because my wife likes the kid to run around the grass and
she's
build
normal.
Stuff in the dirt.
Okay.
And
And
I sneak the kid the iPad every now and then, saying shh.
So, social networking sites you participate in?
So Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I have a Facebook and LinkedIn account, but those are dormant, personal and dormant.
And last book read, electronic or paper?
Electronic, of course.
I'm gonna have to run this through my UniVac and find out which is the current carrying. This is neck and neck here. It really is neck and neck. I'll let you guys wrestle out in the lobby and determine have a foot race or something, huh?
Right. If we wrestle, whoever loses is actually the bigger geek, right?
Yeah, so. That's the idea. Never thought of that. No, I'm weaker than you. Oh, yeah, no, I'm weaker than you. Huh? That would really be the challenge, wouldn't it? Turn things upside down. Well, let's turn something to a different perspective. Let's look at the future here, Brian. They used to have this 8-ball in the studio here. I'd hand it to my guests. So what's going to happen here in the next 4 or 5 years is, are all the doctors going to have like a Google Glass on and they're going to be golfing and they're going to do diagnosis remotely? I mean, what's going to happen here in the next 5 to 6 years with healthcare IT and apps and everything?
So I'm a bit of a what's called a quantified self geek, and we're people who, you know, as a data geek, love to just measure things, right? So I've carried a device called a Fitbit around in my pocket for the last few years. Every morning, I step on a scale that transmits my data to the cloud, my weight data, BMI, all that kind of stuff. And you know, various other sort of things that monitor and allow me to look at data throughout the course of a day. This world is in its infancy, and we're all, you know, everybody who has a smartphone is carrying around a device that's capable of measuring many of these things, and we are generating reams and reams and reams of potentially very interesting and useful data all the time. And so when I look at all of this stuff that's happening, I see a future not too long from now where the data that we generate gets processed algorithmically to help us lead healthier and more effective lives, which in an interesting way kind of helps in some respects by alleviating the burden on primary care docs, right? Because you can do things like proactive notifications and things like that. So I think that the idea of personally generated data becoming more and more of a fixture in what we're doing is the key.
Dr. Harry Greenspan once said that just because you got an app didn't make you healthy.
That's right.
What do you think is ahead, Todd?
So I think that, I mean, if you look at lots of other industries, they've gotten really good using data and IT at delivering what you want, what you need at the right moment, right? I think that while the apps are interesting, the apps on your iPhone or Android phone or whatnot, I think what's far more interesting to me actually is how the healthcare delivery system itself actually rewires itself to be able to have much better guidance, much better process control, much better continuous process improvement embedded in it, leveraging data that enables it to deliver better outcomes more affordably, right? And so like a great example of this is Dr. Jen Brohl. She's a rural primary care doctor in Kansas, and she recently installed an electronic health record. And Dr. Brohl told me, she said, look, I'm a great doctor. All doctors think they're great. It's like Lake Wobegon. Every doctor's above average, right? And then she looked at the data in her electronic health record, she looked at her rate of colorectal cancer screening and the patients who actually needed it versus the patients who actually got it. And she found that she had really only ensured that 43% of her patients that needed that screening had gotten it, which she said was terrible, terrible. So she engaged in a push, a big push, to increase it, and she got it actually up to 90%. And along the way, three people that she actually got screened, who hadn't gotten screened, two of whom were personal friends of hers, she actually detected early stage cancer in these patients. It was early enough that they didn't need radiation or chemo. They just had surgery, which saved their lives and actually also saved a bunch of expense. So that to me is just a great example, one of many, right, of how the healthcare delivery system can actually use data, use IT, deliver better outcomes at lower cost, and help America.
And that's the phrase that pays, I think, for this interview. Better outcomes, lower costs. That should be the headline. I think that's the whole idea behind what you guys are trying to accomplish, or not trying to, actually accomplishing at the Datapalooza. We've got to end this interview here, running out of time. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests, Brian Sivek, CTO at HHS, and Todd Park, CTO of the United States. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.